Five.
Chris, the topic we'll be discussing today is, how do you help players who just don't get the mechanics of the game you're playing?
I mean, how do players help me, the GM, who does not get the mechanics of the game?
Exactly, yes.
Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, you made a comment to me yesterday or today about how the world can be a strange and wonderful place sometimes when you start like kind of looking around at specific elements of it. And I wanted to tell you about a place that I went to a couple days ago that is just like totally top of mind for me.
Okay.
If you'll allow me to.
Yeah, for sure. For context, I made this comment after you shared that you had found someone on like Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist or something selling tomatoes.
Giving away
tomatoes that he appeared to have like picked out of a salad, but he didn't like the tomatoes, so he bagged them and he listed them on. And then that made me think of a discussion with some of our friends a while ago about this company where you can tell them you want like a gigantic amount of wood chips delivered to your property, but they won't tell you like how much they're bringing or when they're going to bring it. So like you just go on a list and they're one day you'll be surprised that your driveway will be blocked by like a 10-foot pile of wood chips. Anyway, those two things made me think that this is kind of a weird and wonderful world we live in.
It really is. And I think there is a tendency for, like, if you just hang out in internet and digital spaces, that it sort of collapses the weirdness into, like, more palatable things, right? Like, I think, you know, like, olds like us will talk about, like, how the web used to be better and all that. And usually what we're saying is that, like, you used to have to, like, really struggle to find anything on the internet. You couldn't just go to Facebook and find some guy selling, you know, giving away tomatoes. Like that, you had to go find like this web ring where people had websites devoted to giving away their free tomatoes that they don't like baggies. So we a couple of days ago, my wife and I were driving from Kalamazoo back to Ann Arbor, and we stopped at this place, this rock shop. It's called the Rock Shop, so it's Michigan's largest rock shop in I think Galesburg.
Oh, okay,
yeah, Galesburg. Michigan. It was just this like delightful place. I mean, it's very clearly like a shop that is a reflection of the owner's personality, right? For good and ill. I mean, mostly for good in my opinion. But like, I mean, so you walk into this place and it is like, you know, it is room upon room of just like rocks like displayed in various ways. And they have like themes to them as well, right? It's like you enter the main area and it's like, you know, rocks like you'd sort of see maybe at other rock shops. But then you like, you know, you kind of go off, you go down this like hallway and then you get to like the mining section. So these are all rocks that you find in like mines and stuff like that. And they have over the loudspeakers, there's like the sound of like pickaxes, like, you know, like going and stuff like that. And then every once in a while, like, you know, this guy will come up, you know, come on over the loudspeakers telling the story about how he lost some dynamite, you know, in the mine and stuff. And you're just like, but you're also like there to buy rocks, right? Like, you know, so you're like looking at all these pretty things and there's like this like immersive experience happening all around you. And then rocks are really cool. I think like it's sort of like a hop, skip, and a jump to then get into like crystals and like how crystals and energy and stuff could work. So there's also like this metaphysical and like occult, like, you know, stuff going on in there too. So you, like, you kind of wander around and you see like books about like how to do astral projection and, and like there's incense and stuff. There was like a room sort of in the back where they were just playing the Lord of the Rings soundtrack on repeat that you could get various like incense and like wizard figurines and stuff like this. And it's just like you're walking through this place and it's just like it's so rich with like these things that you just don't see, right? Like you're not going to go to Target's rock and crystals section and get the same experience like that. But it just it got my GM brain spinning, obviously, right? Like, so on one hand, right, and I shared a picture of this, like there's just stuff that looks like really good props that you could use, right? All these different rocks and stuff. And I actually bought one one small piece of fluorite that looks like, I don't know, looks like a little like obelisk tower thing that I now have on my desk. So I'm getting into really getting into crystals now, I guess.
I can see that. Did it come with a little tag that makes a lot of very dubious claims about like its effects on your health and mood?
Yes. Yeah. It did not. Although, I mean, I think, you know, every time I look at it, I just get this like, you know, a couple hours pass and I just am still staring at it. So right. I don't know if that's bad or good. But yeah. So, I mean, it was just like, yeah, this place that just made me sort of like remember that, like, I don't know, your games can be weirder than they are, probably, like, especially your shops too, right? Like, it doesn't just have to be like, you don't go in and there's like the list of standard adventuring equipment. Like, what if you walked into a shop and it was like, oh, we only have crystals here. Like, we only have books related to like self-published books on astral projection, right? Like, that is like a heck of a brain worm to sort of think about, of like, I don't know. And like Call of Cthulhu, I think, gets into this a lot too, of like, what if those books weren't just like nonsense? Like, what if they were actually real? Like, you're digging through the stack and you find the self-published book and it's like, oh, this actually would summon an old god or another.
Right? Yeah. Well, there's that quirkiness you get in real life that, you know, that you don't get in. Have you been in a store where the store is like selling you one thing, like hardware, but then there's like a section that just selling stuff that has nothing, is like completely unrelated. Mm-hmm. Like, but they make bread. So there's like a wall of like bread. Like, there's those little things, they add a lot of charm to like a store or just like what would be a really routine experience. And yeah, we've talked at different points about how do you make these sorts of kind of everyday life encounters in a game just a little bit more interesting the way that they are in real life. Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know. It's a fun thing to think about.
Yeah, because I think there's a tendency to sort of collapse a lot of those things into that list of adventuring gear, right? Like, if you're going into a store. Yeah, but like, the more you can lean into that, and it's like, even, you know, you could still have that list of adventuring gear, but exactly to your point, like, but then there's also, you know, bread. Bread there is pretty good. One other tangent, and I'll just sort of tease this, and then I'm sure everybody will ask me questions about it. There was a hardware store nearby me where I grew up, and I don't know if I've talked about this on air or not, but it had a monkey inside of it. So in the hardware store, you'd walk around, and sort of in the middle of the store was a large cage with a very angry little monkey. Presumably treated very well, but I mean, it was like, the you know, like, my dad would be like, hey, you got to come with me to the hardware store. It's like, can we go to the one with the monkey, right? You know, because you're a kid.
Obviously, yes.
Yeah, you want to see that. But I mean,
is a powerful marketing tool. Like,
right? You know, yeah, like, it is. I mean, and then it does raise some questions about animal cruelty and all that. Yes. However, but yeah. So anyway, go forth and make your shops more interesting by putting bread and monkeys in them.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to, before we jump into our topic, I wanted to relate just real briefly. I had a fun experience GMing for a bunch of basically younger middle school boys. So age range is like 12-ish, a couple 13s in there. We ran 5th edition D&D, although, and maybe we can get into this or maybe not, did not really engage meaningfully with the rules at all.
Yeah.
And then I ran a very, very reworked version of the Hole in the Sky adventure for Dungeon Crawl Classics.
Oh, cool.
So I picked that one was recommended to me by someone in the podcast community. It has a thing that I love, which is like just a really interesting central set piece with no obvious way to like accomplish your goal or to get out. I mean, it's assumed the players will figure out how to do it, but it's really not prescribed. Like, first you have to go here and get this item, and, you know, just a room with a lot of stuff and characters, a big chamber with a lot of things in it that you can interact with. And I always enjoy that sort of thing. So, but yeah, but running for that, I've run for kids and I've run for kids that age, but I've never run games that only had boys of that age who were. And it was just a very different experience, even than the other games I've run for kids.
So. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. How would you give a summary of what it was like running for that amount of like hormones and silliness?
Well, it was really chaotic. It was well outside my, you know, normal comfort zone, GMing comfort zone, if you will. There was a huge amount of silliness, but it was, most of it was like a performative silliness, like constantly trying to one-up the stupid thing your friends had just done. It got very, very silly. And as we always say, if you're playing, if players are having fun, you're a great GM, the game is working. But I was not, it was very, very hard to get them to stop trying to fight each other constantly here. And like, what are you going to do? I've given you like this really clear thing. So maybe I'm not articulating that well, but it was, they had a great time. That is not a kind of game I enjoy like participating in, like as a person. I mean, I don't mind doing it because it's my kid and you do stuff with your kids that you don't really love all the time. I felt like I just got a glimpse of a totally different way to like use a role-playing game to have fun than would ever really occur to me. And that is to be silly and dumb and stupid and dial that up to 11. So I don't know, what do you think about all that?
I'm kind of constantly at 11 too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's great that you did that. Like I'm thinking about like growing up, like that is not something at all that like my father would have put up with or done for me. So like, yeah, good for you for doing that. It's, I guess like maybe relating it back to our topic today a little bit. Right, so you're running 5e. I'm sure you didn't touch a lot of the rules. Did you feel like at any point they understood the mechanics of what was going on, or was everything just like, I want to do this silly thing, and then you would, as the GM, have to sort of be like, okay, well, you need to roll a d20 here if you want to try that?
That's a good question, because that occurred to me while I was running, because it was a situation where the players each had like extremely detailed knowledge of really specific pieces of the rules.
And
almost no grasp of like systems outside whatever caught their interest. So there was one kid that knew all about spell details and yet didn't really seem to have too much of a grasp of any of the other game systems at play.
Yeah.
So I have this picture that, you know, of a kid that like flipped through the rule book and read very intently the parts of the book that were really interesting to him and skipped over the stuff that didn't seem very interesting. So I did have to do a combination of rules explaining, and then every now and then I would get corrected on a very minute, you know, detail. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
You had some very specific rules lawyers. I mean, well, it sounds like, you know, like you said, they were having a lot of fun. I mean, it's like the kid in this scenario, right, who knew all about like the spells. Do you think they just like memorized all the spells, they like read it a bunch, or were they like, oh, like in Vancian magic, right, like you have these spell slots and like components and stuff? Like, were they into it on that level, the mechanical level, or was it really just like the cool spell descriptions?
So this particular kid knew all the mechanics and like fluff detail about low level spells and cantrips. And he also had clearly read and more or less memorized a lot of the like race entries or species or whatever the term is now. So, you know, he knew all about dark elves, a lot of details about dark elves. So again, I think he just dipped in and out of the book to the things that seemed cool to him.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I think you probably did it the right way of just like, yeah, like reminding them rather than being like, okay, we need to stop and go over all the rules together and like that. Although, I mean, yeah, did you do any of that to start with? Because it sounds like they were all familiar enough with 5e to know.
They were all familiar enough with the concept. All of them. So here's another thing, and it's a whole nother topic, but they all listen religiously to at least one, maybe a couple of like actual plays out there, like fairly popular ones. And I know which ones they listen to because I listened to it in the car with my son. It's a specific one he likes. And it is one of those ones where everybody at the table is trying to be funny. And no judgment here. I find that I have a little bit of that goes a real long way for me personally. But I wondered while we were playing, like, how much of this is just what kids do when they're playing D&D? How much of it is because, like, their model for what a D&D game looks like is a bunch of people trying to one-up each other with, like, wacky hijinks? I suspect, you know, that it's mostly just what kids do, but they certainly aren't listening to, you know, serious hardcore role-playing, take it really seriously type of role-playing experiences. Mm-hmm. They're listening to the comedy, improv comedy ones. And so, yeah, I don't know.
I guess it'd be hard to interact with that as your sort of your primary like cultural touch point for D&D and then go and play a different style game. Right. Like I guess I wouldn't fault them for thinking that's how you have to play, or even really thinking like, oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. Like I'm listening to this podcast and everybody's laughing and having fun together. Like I want to do that with my friends. Right. Like, yeah. So let's sort of play that style.
Yeah. When I started role playing, you know, I had a different baseline for what my understanding of D&D was, and it came from being a huge Lord of the Rings fan. And so we played our D&D games, at least initially, in the tone of a Lord of the Rings type story, right? So pretty serious, few comic moments here and there, but, you know, and lots of serious talk about which elven dialects does your character speak, you know? And I'm biased that it's not very hard to start with that as a baseline and add as much humor and wackiness as you want. I found it very difficult at the game table with the baseline of doing the silliest, craziest thing you can possibly think of. I found it hard to like rein us back, tone that down, if that makes sense, into something that at least, I mean, it was hard to get them just to engage in any meaningful way with like, quote, the mission or the plot.
One, I mean, the obvious question is like, do they need to, right? And I think like, yeah, a little bit, right? Because it's like if you let it sort of just keep on spinning out of control, at some point it sort of becomes like a game of Fiasco at that point, like where like Fiasco is super fun, but it's also has an end point, which I think makes it fun, right? Everything's just going wrong and, you know, like you're just building upon it and stuff like that. I think like a D&D game, unless you're also willing to like come back at them pretty hard with like, oh, and well, your character's dead now, right? Like, you know, because
I had several moments where I was like, if you do that, your character will die. And that tended to stop them. But I realized that if I didn't enforce some sort of direction or like, okay, guys, it's time to choose which way you're going to go next, every scene would end with them killing each other. Because everything would just escalate to the point where they're fighting each other and pushing each other off of cliffs and casting spells at each other and stuff. And, you know, it's all very fun. But after the game, I thought, you know, if they like that, if that's what they want, I mean, first of all, I wish I hadn't spent any time like reading the published module and preparing it and tweaking it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if what you want is like a big arena battle with big battlefield strewn with interesting stuff and you just go to town killing each other and goofing around, I mean, if I were to run for this particular group again, I would be tempted to just give them what they want, which is, all right, let's fight. You'll all be dead at the end of this because you'll kill each other, but like we'll have fun doing it. So
yeah, just like, yeah, gladiator, like a boss rush sort of thing. Like,
to be clear, that sounds like that's as close to anti-fun for me personally that I can possibly think, but like, if that's what they want, maybe I'll try and give that to them more
directly. I mean, that's not a bad, I'm just trying to envision you as a GM like sitting there just with the monster manual just sort of flipping through and being like, let's see what you do with this one, right? Like, it's not your style at all. I mean, that also sounds like maybe kind of a good time to try once, just like see what they do with it.
I didn't mean to go on quite so long about this, but it was interesting. I, you know, from what I gather and talking to some other people, you know, it sounds like this is pretty normal teenage boy gaming behavior. It wasn't my gaming behavior when I was a teenage boy, so it's a little weird to me, but you know, I get it. So
yeah, different generations, man. You just
understand. What generation are they? Whatever. They,
I don't know.
Buying their lattes and not saving up to buy houses they will never be able to afford.
Yeah, right. Yeah. If you don't have $300,000 put away by the time you're 12, you're behind the eight ball.
That's right. Do you know how irritating it is, by the way, when you're not a boomer and your children keep calling you a boomer? You remember a couple years ago when boomer was a thing?
They knew exactly what they were doing.
they have that button.
So I guess like thinking about our topic like just even a little bit more, right? So I mean, I think there's obviously like the hey, you're just dealing with a kid who's like not mature enough mentally, right, to like keep grasp of like all the rules and mechanics and stuff in there. So I mean, I think that's sort of like one part of this question about like players who just don't get the mechanics, right? And I think it's like, it's totally fine to either like strip them down. So like, that's what I'll often do if like, it's just, you know, just sort of make it easier, right? Like if I'm just playing a game with my 8-year-old, we're just sort of imagining, but we want to have some dice on the table. It's like, okay, like we'll just have one that we're rolling to sort of, you know, pass fail on that. But like when it comes to like, I don't know, like adults or like people in your gaming group, like, I mean, I'm sure have you had this experience where it's just like, it doesn't seem like, no matter how many times you do combat, it's like you have to kind of explain it from first principles every time. I guess, have you had that experience with any players?
Sort of. The vast majority of games that I play, it all boils down to rolling a die, usually a d20, and higher is better. And yeah. I love that you can simplify, you know, most D&D type games down to that if you don't really want to worry too much about the details. So I have not really had too many situations where it was clear someone just didn't really understand what they were doing at the table. I have certainly been in games where it's like, you know, it's been a year, you should probably know what your armor class is or be able to find it, you know, when asked, I guess. But I don't know if that is like a I don't understand question and more of just like a personal, you know, an engagement with the game question. So
yeah, I mean, that's a good distinction too. Yeah, there's like, there's the mechanics and then also just the stuff that you sort of choose to interact with as a player. Yeah, I mean, I think I like running, I'm thinking about this, I did this one shot years ago, a couple years ago, I don't know what time is anymore, where it was a hack of lasers and feelings, and something about that dice mechanic is both super simple and like every time we rolled it was like a little confusing.
I know about exactly what you're talking about. Was it like your Halloween game that you ran?
Yeah, it was a Halloween game. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm sure I've talked about it on the podcast before in different ways, but like, yeah, there was just something about that dice mechanic where like everybody, and it was, I think we had like 5 or 6 players maybe or so, and myself. And a lot of these people have played mini games before in the past, right? Like, so it wasn't like a bunch of, you know, people that had never played a role-playing game before. It was just like, every time we rolled, we were like, so you want to roll under, you know, under your number or over your number.
That was like the challenge with that one, right? Because sometimes you're rolling over and sometimes you're rolling under. Is that,
I believe so, right? And like, I can't even remember right now. Yeah. I think you have sort of two numbers, like lasers and feelings are your two numbers. And then you're rolling D6s and trying to like, you know, either get above that number or equal it or below it. Really, like, I don't even remember what the details are. Like, it just like, it's stuck in my head, right? And so like, for me, right, like when I'm running games, I'm also considering myself a player too. So for me, like when I don't get the mechanics of someone who's running the game, like that is a frustrating experience for me, and like also like kind of spikes my anxiety too. Mm-hmm. So like that, I mean, that game, like running it, you know, and the sun's going down because we're playing outside because it was like kind of middle of the pandemic and stuff. You know, the sun's going down, like, so I'm like trying to read my rule sheets by flashlight outside near a fire. Every time we're rolling, it's slowing down the game because we just like have this friction with it, right? And I think for me, that's like the reason to try to understand the mechanics, is because once you do, then you can kind of like start moving through the story. And like, it feels like the mechanics are supporting the story rather than just being this like this friction or this impediment to like sort of what you want to do. So like every time I've had a player who like isn't quite grasping what the rules are or the mechanics are, it's usually because there is some sort of frustration with them between like what they want to be doing and like what the game system is allowing them to do. The same time, so they're like, well, I want to like turn invisible and blow everybody up, and it's like, well, you can't, like, first of all, if you were able to do those things, it would be two separate actions and you gotta wait for everybody else to take their turn.
Yes.
Like, yeah. And then second of all, like you can't do those two things, right? Like, so it's like it's like that, and it's like, well, I mean, I can explain that to you mechanically, right, like that we just don't have those abilities, or I can try to explain that to you like story-wise, that like if you can do that, then your opponent can do that, right? Like, you know, you know, but like, yeah, it really just kind of comes down to like, yeah, grappling with those mechanics and those rules. Until you do that, like, you're just always going to be like, well, I don't know exactly what I can do
here. Have you ever had a situation in a game where a player, you know, they have the option to just be boring and roll to attack, but instead they're like, I'm gonna jump up on the chandelier and swing, and then you're like, well,
yeah,
that's a -2, and then you'll have to, and then you'll have to use an extra action to do that, and you'll be penalized because you're moving and attacking, and it's like, and the joy, you see the joy of the idea going away. They're like, well, I guess I'll just roll to attack then.
But, yeah, yep, yep, yep.
The last game night of our Band of Blades game went better, specifically because, well, one of the reasons it went better was that I let go a little bit of the dice mechanics, and I just chose not to take any time considering certain like metrics, certain like factors that can play into dice. So I just tried to keep it as close to like just roll a couple dice as possible, if that makes sense. So that was a case that wasn't the players had a hard time understanding. That was me having a hard time understanding it. And the solution for me personally was maybe later when I'm better at like just using and understanding this core die mechanic, maybe later I'll start to just add on the extra stuff, but I'm going to not do the extra stuff for a little while. And that worked. And most role-playing games I've played, you know, have had something like that, where like at heart, the core mechanic is pretty simple and you can scale the complexity depending on how much, you know, how nitty gritty you want it. Interestingly, like that lasers and feelings thing you describe is a case where like it's the die mechanic at its most basic is somewhat challenging to, you know, and it might be a very good game system. I'm not critiquing it, but that's one where like, you know, that would be hard to simplify because just the core premise of it is part of what makes it confusing, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it's not like if you tried to simplify it or remove it, like it is the game, right? It's a one page RPG. Like, like to your point, like Band of Blades, it's like, you can play with just the like straight up, like we're just going to roll 1d6 and, you know, sort of see what happens. Yeah. And then you can start adding all those modifiers and stuff onto it. Like, so your die roll, like still might end up being 1d6, but like all the complicating factors, right, kind of going into it and out of it, are pretty fascinating. But like, it also is, I'm with you playing like Blades in the Dark or Band of Blades, like those games. I know we've talked about it, like you need a flow chart to understand them sometimes. Well,
We can wrap up here in a minute. One thing, we've talked about this on the show, I'm pretty sure, in the past, but like when I run games, because I'm usually running games for busy adults, this is something I want to work on and find a better balance for. But like my default going in is I've got to shield the players from the complexity of this game. Like I've read the 350 page book. I know how complex this is. And it's my job to protect the players because there's a good chance they'll find it confusing and unfun if they have to deal with all of these numbers or all these different types of dice or whatever like that. And, you know, that's how I've run games through most of my adult life. And just in the last year or two, it has started to sink in that, like, I'm doing everybody a disservice in that. Like, I might be sparing them a little bit of grappling with a kind of irritatingly complex die system, but you know, it also robs them of the chance to like to learn the system and to become proficient in it and to start you know, to acquire the mastery that's needed to really start pushing it to kind of empower what you want to do in the game. So that's like a personal goal of mine, has been to do less hiding of the mechanics behind the veil of like, I'll do all the math in the background. You just roll and tell me what you get. Which I would like to do less of that going forward and more of like, all right, everybody, let's like figure out how we're gonna, let's all talk through this die roll. And I think this has worked pretty well in last year in a Star Trek game or two I played. I deliberately did that when there was a roll. It would be like, okay, everybody, in front of everybody else, we're going to build your dice pool. And I thought that made the roles more fun and engaging. And I'd like to think that the players had a better understanding of what was going on. I feel like I'm drifting off of the topic here, but
no, it's good. I mean, like, yeah, like you don't want to like gatekeep the rules, right?
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
Yeah. Like you also have access to these. I mean, I think like when I've run D&D in the past, it's been like, I've always sort of said, like, you can get the player's handbook if you want. If you're not interested in that, like we can find a way to simplify it, but like there's a lot of joy that can be had in understanding sort of your options there. I'm not a min-maxer, like that's just not my mentality, but I am like a, like, what are sort of like interesting choices I can make within this character, right? And like, if you don't understand the rules well enough, it's hard to make those choices, right? Like there's the game I'm playing in right now, I'm like, it took me a while to sort of realize that, like the character that I've been creating, like, is not matching what I want it to be necessarily. And it comes back to a little bit of just sort of my choices in my character sheet at the beginning. Right. And like, that's again, not a knock on anybody who's playing the game or you're my GM or anything like that. It's just like, I didn't really grapple with the rule system well enough to really like be able to make that character exactly how I wanted it to be made. Right. So like, I ended up taking some abilities and stuff that like, I'm just like, I don't really want like when it comes down to it. Yeah. And like, so like that can be a little frustrating, and it is something like, well, it can be a little frustrating. I can also undo it. Right. Like we can find a way to make that work. So I think that would be like maybe the other thing that maybe I'll just close with this thought is like, if like the mechanics are like getting in the way of what you're doing, sure, simplify them and stuff. If there's something that you feel like is going to be like a good thing for your group that you're playing with, like, it's okay to stop a couple sessions in and be like, oh, like, who wants to revise their character sheet? Yeah. Like, now that you understand this a little bit more, or like, hey, is it okay if we start tracking fall damage, or like, I don't know, like whatever you're the thing that you're scared of in the rule system, like that now you understand a little bit more, like by all means, like just have that conversation sort of, you know, away from the table, or like, yeah, with your players, and just be like, hey, like, we're gonna start doing this, do you want to modify? Like, totally fine, right? Like, yeah. And I think that can be received really well, because again, you're like, you're playing a game together, like, and it's different from Monopoly in that like there's a set of rules that you have to know before before you're playing. Like, yeah, you can modify those. So.
Yeah. All right. I love it. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, that does it for us. We've been Roll for Topic. Our sister show, The Splat Book. You can go find them at thesplatbook.com. They are also part of the Roll for It Media Podcasting Network. Just listen to their latest episode where they were talking about ADHD and gaming. It was really good. I mean, it's definitely worth a listen, especially if you're interested sort of in like, in ADHD and sort of like how that can play into like your approach to games and stories and things like that. So yeah, go give them a listen. They are wonderful. But yeah, I think that is about it. You got anything else you want to say, Andy?
Nope, I'm all good.
Cool. All right. Well, I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your player is having fun, you're a great GM.